The Defense Department is watching the mergers and acquisitions market develop, and it is ready to step in if it doesn't like what it sees. It's worried about a drop in competition, among other factors. The M&A market, though, is not completely dead. Kevin Kelly is Chief Executive Officer of LGS Innovations, and he has some firsthand experience with M&A recently. My guest now on Industry Chatter to start off the program every Thursday. Kevin, first of all, it's great to see you. Thank you for coming back in. Happy to have you back on the program. Give me the thumbnail sketch of what you do for customers in the federal government.
Sure. Thanks for having me. What LGS does is we provide research and development on advanced technologies, some services, and telecommunications products for the federal enterprise globally.
Mm-hmm.
The research is in the area of cybersecurity, photonics, RF technologies, tactical communications, special operations type communications, as well as more conventional commercial communications for, again, the military and civilian and intelligence communities globally.
All right. Another thumbnail, the recent transaction that your company has undergone, where you came from and where you are today.
Sure. LGS used to be a wholly owned subsidiary of Alcatel-Lucent, one of the world's largest telecommunications solutions providers. We went through a divestiture that started in 2013 and concluded this past March, where we are now privately owned by a consortium of private equity firm Madison Dearborn, based in Chicago, and a management firm Covant Technologies, based in McLean, Virginia.
What's the difference in how your company operates and the markets that you're in now and what you may explore? What can you do now that you couldn't do before as part of the old company?
Sure. LGS was only focused on the federal government and the federal government industry and marketplace in general. That was through a charter agreement that we had with our owners, Alcatel-Lucent, at the time. After the divestiture, and one of the intended purposes of the divestiture was to open up some of the technologies we developed, some of the intellectual property we have, some of the solutions we have, to adjacent markets like transportation, banking, utilities and so forth, and explore some of those new markets with our capabilities.
Mm-hmm. The process that you underwent, because this isn't the typical acquisition where I am a big company, I see somebody I like that complements my skill set, I buy them and incorporate them in. This was a little different. A divestiture works differently. What you've learned, you've learned a lot about what this market looks like now, the M&A, and I guess it should more accurately be called the M&A&D market, right, or the MAD market. What have you learned about this in managing through a transition like this?
A couple of things. One, buyers, there is a market. There are buyers out there. If you have something that's unique, that's compelling, that's profitable, that has a solid pipeline of opportunity, that takes you multiple years out, that provides you some distinction in the marketplace, there is a market for you. We are actually in the acquisition mode ourselves, evaluating possible opportunities, and so we have the benefit of the perspective of both sides of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
But through the divestiture process, we did talk with both private equity firms as well as with large strategic systems integrators about the potential of acquiring this business, and there was a lot of interest. It just, I think, came down to our ability to offer something that was unique and differentiated, but was sufficient enough to address new markets, not just the markets we had.
What's the significance of the budget situation the federal government's in a decision to move from an organization that only sells to the government to move to an organization that the federal market makes up a component, but not the entire portfolio of what you sell?
So I think that's key to our transaction in particular. We are in a shrinking budget environment. That's typically when M&A or when acquisitions and mergers occur, but they occur for different reasons. There's a smaller pot of money out there.
Mm-hmm.
Us going through a divestiture was largely fueled by the fact that we could address in near term new market opportunities with the technologies and solutions we have. So I think that was a pretty key factor in our own situation.
I want to come back to the nuts and bolts of the M&A market in a little bit, but you mentioned some of the things that you do at the beginning of our conversation. And in getting ready to have you come in and talk to you again, I know a little bit about cybersecurity, and I know a little bit about a lot of the other things in your portfolio. I had to look up photonics.
Okay.
And educate myself a little bit. That's a very exciting field that you're a part of.
It is, and it's a field that has applicability. You know, our technologies grew up from our heritage, which is Bell Laboratories, developing high-speed photonic or laser-based communications. Those same technologies can be used for sensing, for ranging, for imagery analysis, as well as in the commercial world for sensor technology. If you buy any modern vehicle these days, it has a host of sensors on there for adaptive cruise control to lane change warnings and all kinds of sensors, some of which have their roots in the technologies that we've been developing and practicing on for the last 10 to 15 years.
So it sounds to me like not just in the photonics field, but across your entire portfolio, ultimately federal agencies have the opportunity in a tight budget time to leverage the R&D work that you're doing for private sector customers when it used to be primarily the other way. I mean, you think about some of the major technology advances in the 60s, 70s, and even into the 80s, and it was the government figured out how to do it, and then other people figured out how to make it commercial, how to commercialize it for the private sector. And that equation seems to be different, dramatically different than it was at that time.
It is, and it's something we're very sensitive to, and that is that much of our technology grew up in the dark space, in closed environments, in closed acquisitions, very close-hold technologies. And they're important to our customers that they don't see the light of day sometimes. Mm-hmm. It gives them a technological advantage over their adversaries. At the same time, we've been discussing with them, and they understand this concept, that taking advantage of the commercial base, taking advantage of a larger pool of investment dollars will benefit both sides. The thing we're most sensitive to is maintaining that separation.
Sure.
So those technologies that do provide a distinct advantage, say, for instance, to the warfighter, stay in their hands, and we find some way to separate the two investment chains.
I hear the term public-private partnership far more often in the last 2 years than I heard it in the 10 years before that, right, covering the federal government. Is this the reason for that, in your view, this outgrowth, this understanding that I'm speaking as somebody maybe inside the government, we might be able to get a bargain here if we're also going to be able to help these folks with a technology that they can go make money on in the commercial sector?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what we're looking for. I don't want to suggest to you that we've solved that problem.
Sure.
It's difficult. And public-private partnership implies that a host of people come to the table and they shake hands and they say, this is what you're going to pay for and this is what I'm going to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, we are trying to play the host to that discussion and continue to develop the technologies that solve hard problems in the federal space, and likewise leverage investment from the non-federal space, state and local or commercial tech markets to advance the ball and create a better solution.
But as that concept becomes more mature and people become more comfortable with it, I mean, I imagine there was a tremendous amount of discomfort when it first became popular,
right,
just because it was new, not mm-hmm. because there was anything wrong with it necessarily, but folks just, I mean, the government doesn't always transition to new concepts as quickly as the private sector does. Now that that concept is mature, is it easier to propose partnerships like that because people are more familiar with the concept and have seen it work many times before?
Many times is a stretch,
okay,
in my opinion. They have seen it work. It does work. I can tell you the closer you get to classified technologies,
uh-huh,
some of the most advanced technologies our government holds close hold, they spend more money than anybody else to develop those solutions for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting more comfortable with that, and we're certainly not the only company in this space.
Yeah.
Anybody who has high tech and R&D deals with that same issue.
So that nut for you, cracking it involves being able to pull technologies that are not too revealing,
right,
out of the black technologies, and somebody can look at it and not have any idea that it's anything that was ever involved with anything classified.
That's one of the hardest challenges
that imagine.
Companies like ours deal with. It's, I have a technology. Well, why do you have that technology?
Uh-huh. Where'd you get that? How'd you pull that off?
Right.
It's certainly understandable. Kevin Kelly's my guest. He's the Chief Executive Officer of LGS Innovations. When we come back, I want to talk about the M&A market and what you are seeing more broadly as somebody who went through the transaction that we just talked about and is continuing to shop. It's industry chatter every Thursday to start off the 4 o'clock hour on In Depth with Francis Rose, and we'll be right back. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. Kevin Kelly, the Chief Executive Officer of LGS Innovations, is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose. I'm following, but not to the degree that you are, the M&A market. And I wonder how you size the market when you're talking about thinking about choosing potential partners for some kind of transaction, as we talked about earlier in our conversation, Kevin. How do you go about breaking the market down so that you can see, at least size-wise, where possible deals may lay?
I don't know that there's a set formula for the categories, but how we look at things are a single technology or a single service offering, and that's typically a 25 to 50 person type organization with revenues in the maybe the single digit millions, maybe tens of millions, to something that's more comprehensive and more more diverse, that has a few hundred people, usually a services company, an IT services company, for instance, or somebody who's doing managed services at a NOC or a data center. That's going to be a few hundred people and maybe multiple locations. A company like our size, we're about 750 employees, and going beyond maybe a couple hundred person organization for acquisition is probably not in our near-term view. Mm-hmm. There are certainly sizing beyond that, and then you get into the large strategics where you have thousands of employees globally. That's a bit out of our reach at the moment.
Now, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air, and one of the points that you made is that it doesn't look like it on the surface because the M&A market is not super active among the huge players, but you said that's not the case when you go down a level or two.
That's right, and what we saw, I think, as a result of wartime spending over the last decade was a lot of new technologies, new offers, new capabilities pulled together in small businesses that are now, they lack diversity in some cases, market diversity. They're looking for partners in the industry. And with the absence of heavy wartime funding, they're going to either need to merge together or join a larger organization like ours. And we call it a bit of a frothy market. There's lots of players. It's dispersed amongst multiple contracts, multiple companies. That's going to keep converging over the next few years. And then I would expect another round of large strategic type acquisitions where they start to gobble up maybe a 5,000 person company that used to be five different companies, mm-hmm. Years earlier.
Is everybody after the same stuff, or is there a diversity in the kinds of areas that various companies are looking to buy?
That's a good question. And what we found when we were on the market was being that of a 750-person company, over 500 of us are engineers. I myself am an electrical engineer. We tend to be heavily focused on the hardcore R&D side of the business. That was a bit unique in the marketplace. What we found from companies interested in acquiring us was that they were seeing a lot of IT services and some software development. But I think companies that specialize in unique cyber technologies, mobile technologies, network virtualization capabilities, those are pretty well sought after at mm-hmm. this point. They're a bit unique.
I think that's important to understand, though, because if a company does something but it's not in demand,
right,
maybe it's carved out a nice little niche for itself, and maybe it's generating some revenue, making some money. But if it's standing by waiting for somebody to eat it up, but it's not doing one of those right. core things that you're talking about, it sounds like it might be a little bit of a longer wait than anticipated.
I think so, and that's where it gets back to something I mentioned earlier with pipeline. You mm-hmm. need to be able to show multiple years of market opportunities and growth in that market
yeah.
going forward.
So what are the other attributes that you look for when you're out in the marketplace and considering some kind of a transaction?
So we have a process where in our strategic planning, we evaluate where we want to be 2 to 5 years down the road. We look at the technologies we have. We look at the access to contracts we have. And then we have some decisions to make. You're going to come up with holes. Do we buy it? Do we build it? Or do we borrow it? So buy it is through acquisition. I need a 50-person organization that does the following. Do we build it? We have money like every other company. We have investors. We have the ability to develop our own solutions. If building it is more economical and we can tailor it to our specific needs, that's what we're going to do. In some cases, we say borrow it. In some cases, we partner. It's just I'm going to have some type of relationship with that other company. I don't want to acquire it. They do too many different things. It's not integratable. and we form some type of partnership. But that's how we go about deciding, you know, what your shopping list is. What do you need to have in your quiver at the end of the day?
Many people that run companies say, sure, I'd love for somebody to come and buy me out. It sounds like not everybody's ready for that, even if you see something you like about a company. Are most people thinking that far ahead when you sit down with them and say there might be a fit here?
I think most people are, yes. I think the danger some companies are going to run into when they're a narrow market company is that they probably have investors. They've been investing for 5 years. They want a return on that investment. They have an expectation for a financial return. Mm-hmm. And irrespective of whether or not a company like ours could integrate their technologies or their capabilities, it just may not be economical for us to do that.
Yeah. So it's an expectations game, I guess, for the people that have put that money up. And that's certainly understandable. What did you come out of this process with your divestiture process that you didn't know that informs how you'll move ahead in the marketplace in the coming months and years?
I think the biggest thing is the partnership with our ownership group. When Alcatel-Lucent approached me and said they would like to entertain the idea of putting the company up for sale, we envisioned probably 10 different ways this could end horribly. And luckily, we had very good conversations with both our current ownership group as well as other prospective owners about what they want to do with the company. And understanding what their expectations are. Are they going to farm it for cash? Are they going to leverage the company? Are they going to look to sell off pieces of the company? Are they going to integrate other companies is really important in the process. So getting a good glimpse into what their view is, how they're going to use this company and this capability in the way that I've described it in terms of using it as a platform, adding to it, adding value over the years, I think was very eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. What do you expect to see more broadly in the market over the next couple of years? You touched on it a little bit, but I'd be curious to hear more in depth about what you expect to see.
Well, I think the idea, whether you call it public-private partnership, that's going to have to occur. Mm-hmm. The saddling the taxpayer with all of the expense associated with developing new solutions is not a long-term answer. So we're seeing this in healthcare, we're seeing this in transportation, we're seeing this in telecom. That's going to drive consolidation in this space, maybe not at the large company sector, but certainly in the small companies that have developed unique capabilities. I think we're going to continue to see consolidation there.
You are on this program today, and you have a very unique honor tomorrow. Tell me what's on your calendar tomorrow.
I do. Dean Dalling over at George Washington University School of Engineering and Applied Science has asked me to serve as their commencement speaker for graduation tomorrow.
Excellent.
It's quite an honor, and I'm really looking forward to being the speaker tomorrow.
Well, congratulations on that, and I hope they have a really fancy honorary degree to give you after the conclusion of that. Thank you very much for coming in, Kevin. It's great to see you again.
Francis, thank you.